I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. As a little bit of a warning, this week's episode of Lore Watch will be discussing the topic of fathers and their relationships to characters throughout Blizzard's storytelling over the years. It is inspired by the fact that this is being recorded on Father's Day. Just wanted to give you a heads up. We understand that the relationship between individuals and their fathers may be complicated. And so as a result, that may be some triggering conversations. And we just wanted to give you a heads up. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in your favorite video games and other things as well. We've been expanding. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm fine.
All right. Well, today, as of the time of this recording, if you are in the United States, I'm not sure if it is internationally or how it shakes out, but at least in North America, today is Father's Day. Fathers can be a very complicated relationship, and it is to not exactly everybody's favorite topic, but it is something that has, reared in its head in games and movies and everything else. The relationship of a father with their children is always something that can be interesting or have some sort of story importance. And the games we play and the games we've been covering here are no different. They're no exception to that. In fact, that is one of the biggest scenes in, the RTS history is Arthas stealing and interacting with his father and all that all shook out. So we thought we might take a moment today and talk about not necessarily maybe our favorites, but how fathers are portrayed in video games like World of Warcraft or any of the other ones that are out there. There's a lot of them. Matt, is there one you think we should start with? Because my go-to is Varian.
Yeah, I can see that. The thing is like, I was going to talk about Deckard Cain.
Ah, that is a good one.
Because Deckard Cain's not only an adoptive father, he's also an actual father. He had, like, actual kids with his actual wife. And he sort of abandoned them to go be a Haradrim. When the Haradrim were basically gone, he sort of chucked his whole family life. And, I mean, you kind of get it. Because, I mean, if he hadn't, world would have been destroyed by demons. And, that would have included his kids. But at the same time, he wasn't that great a dad the first time around. I don't know if you'd say he did better the second time. His sort of foster fathering of Leah, not his fault. I'm not blaming him for this, but he didn't exactly prepare her for the whole, your mom's super evil thing. I don't know. Deckard Cain. I think he's an interesting example of somebody who's definitely a father and a father figure, but at the same time, maybe lacked in certain areas.
Well, I think it's actually not a bad one to start with, just from an interesting standpoint, I agree. especially when you consider that a lot of players would consider Decker Kane the sort of their fatherly figure, their sort of role model, or I shouldn't even say role model, their confidant, their mentor in Diablo. Like, that's what he's doing. He's helping you as the player as much as you are helping him, whether it's advice or, you know, breaking down spells, telling you how to use the Hadrick Cube, giving you bits of lore and history. But his own past is definitely very tumultuous, I guess would be the best way to put it. So you mentioned his wife and his kid. So he did marry somebody named Amelia and have a son named Jared. Decker Kane got so absorbed into his work that eventually his wife left with their son. And if I remember correctly, they were murdered, right? Like bandits wound up taking him and her out and leaving.
Yeah, the wagon they used, basically, Deckard and his wife Amelia had a final argument that their son Jared witnessed. And then it was an argument they'd been having over and over again about him not, you know, focusing on his actual life, but instead on, you know, the stuff his mother had always told him about the Haradrim and so forth, and him trying to be both at once and kind of doing a crappy job at both.
Mm-hmm.
This one's kind of rough, guys. Basically, as they were taking the wagon train east from Tristram, if they're going east, I think they were probably headed towards Lucolain or someplace.
That would make sense, yeah.
But they never got there because bandits attacked the wagon, and both Jared and his mother were killed. And so Deckard went from being a father to not being a father.
And then he repeated this role of mentor, not just for the player, but like you mentioned Leah, but there was also somebody in between as well. Didn't he also become the tutor for Prince Aiden and sort of take on like a fatherly role for the boy in a lot of ways?
You could argue that. Yeah. I mean, certainly it's hard to argue that Prince Aiden got a lot of fatherly anything from his father, the king, because
King Leoric.
King Leoric was kind of having a mental decline during that period of time due to the whole Archbishop Lazarus secretly working for, you know, the prime evils and driving the king slowly insane sort of thing. You know, sort of like a rough period for everybody. I don't think it wasn't until Aiden left for the war with Westmarch, the stupid war, that, you know, Tristram decided it was going to wage against the much more powerful nation to the west. But while he was off doing that, the whole Darkening of Tristram thing happened. King Leoric sort of started, you know, the war itself was a sign of Leoric's decline, and it was a sign that the Darkening was starting, because they couldn't possibly win. And I'm pretty sure Leoric was from Khajistan. He was, you know, part of that empire, and he was a noble amongst the people of Khajistan. But the Zakharum Church told him to come to Tristram, to Kanduras. The nation is Kanduras. They told him to come to Kanduras in the name of the Zakharum and declare himself king. But he didn't know that Lazarus, the guy that was advising him on that, worked for Mephisto. And that their whole plan was to find the monastery where Diablo's soulstone had been left and reclaim it and thus use it to free Diablo. And that's why Tristram, which was a sleepy, out-of-the-way place, there is no reason that Cain would have met Aiden if not for this decision. Because Tristram, where Cain lived, was a nowheresville. The only reason it even existed was because there had been a Haradrim monastery there. The same Haradrim monastery that his ancestor Jared had been part of, the same one where the Diablo Soulstone had been left. Nobody knew that except a very few people. Unfortunately, Mephisto was one of them. And so all of this happened, I don't want to say because of, but almost ancillary to this whole period. The Kanduras Westmarch War was over really fast, because Kanduras did not have anything like an army. Like, when Westmarch was founded, it was also founded by Rakis, who was a Khajistani, person, but it was, hundreds of years earlier. He led an entire army of paladins west with him, and they built a militaristic nation. In comparison, Leoric went to Candorus with his family and an evil archbishop that was playing him. They just didn't have the force, So yeah, it's interesting that Cain was Aiden's tutor. I don't know if you can say he was really a father figure exactly, but he's probably the only sane person that he dealt with, considering his father was slowly going insane, and that after Aiden went off to fight in the war, his father executed his mother. Speaking of bad fathers, which this is rapidly turning into, and I had not foreseen this, King Leoric, terrible dad. I have a balance
for this after, don't worry.
But yeah, King Leoric, terrible dad. Cain, not the best dad. Although it should be said that Cain's crime was mostly just neglect. He didn't intend anything to happen to his son, or his wife for that matter. That wasn't his intention. They left and were murdered by bandits. It's not, he certainly would have probably gone to find them when he had calmed down. But yes, during the whole Draconia Tristram Diablo thing, and it's interesting because if you actually play the original Diablo, the character that we later find out is Aiden is just the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear that Cain knows him and advises him throughout that. Probably should have told him not to stick anything in his head. In retrospect, not the best decision Aiden ever made. But he was starting to lose it after seeing his father is now an evil skeleton and his mom is dead. And his little brother, who he thought he was saving, was in fact the demon he was killing the whole time. So, yeah. And that actually combines in with Cain here, because Cain was the, for lack of a better word, foster father or guardian or what have you of Leah. But Aiden was her father. But obviously he didn't know her because, after he stuck a soul stone in his forehead and started having Diablo take over his body, him and Adria had relations. We're talking about Aiden being her father, so you understand that he had to father her with Adria. So that's another, not the best father, because I don't think Diablo is a very good father.
No, definitely not.
Considering that Diablo then later in life possesses Leia's body, turns it into his body, and we never find out anything about Leia ever again. And we're apparently not going to in Diablo 4. Like, Leia died, I guess, and her spirit went wherever spirits go when they die. You got me there. That's a thing that the angels and demons don't know. So yeah, what I'm saying is Diablo doesn't have a single good father in it, and the closest it's got is Deckard Cain, who at least tries.
At least now. Didn't start that
Although, you could argue that Mephisto is actually a decent dad. Because of his two children, he only banished one to be destroyed forever. And the other one ran away from... Mephisto is a terrible father too. Okay, yeah. But Lilith and Lucien, yeah, both are existing. I don't know if Lucien still exists, actually. He might be dead. But Lilith still does, and she's going to be the main antagonist of Diablo 4. So, Mephisto's a crap father. Yeah, they're all terrible.
Let's talk about some good fathers then to balance this out. Although Blizzard does seem to have a tendency of wrapping up stories of fatherhood with tragedy, they seem to go hand in hand, at least in the past. I'm hoping that changes in the future. But in recent releases, in particular with the Sylvanas book, we got a glimpse of a father who was actually good at what he did. He was a good father, or at least he tried to be. He tried to do what was best for his people and for his family. And with that, I'm going to talk about Varith Windrunner. Varith Windrunner was obviously the father of all of the Windrunner siblings, husband to Larissa, who was the Ranger General and the chief diplomat and advisor to King Asterion. This is a rather important role, but also he made time to be with his family and to spend time like teaching his kids. In particular, some of the scenes in the book that I thought were really interesting were when Sylvanas would recount the times with her father, and her father trying to make it a point to teach her the ways of being, like, diplomatic, not just having her rely on her skills as a hunter or skills as a windrunner in general or a farstrider. And he tried to impart to her having wisdom, using your brain, making sure that you could think your way through a situation, because not every situation called for an arrow or daggers or violence of any necessity. And sometimes taking that extra couple moments to understand what was going on helps you out in the long run. Now, this is a lesson that she may have not necessarily taken to heart until way too much later, but it is one of those formative things where throughout the entire portrayal of their relationship in that book, in the Sylvanas Windrunner book, it is characterized as a healthy relationship. When Sylvanas' mother, Larissa, would get very angry and sort of do scoldings or punish the children, it was Vareth that would sort of soften the blow. He would go through and almost in a scandalous nature with Sylvanas, encourage her pranks or, advise her to be smarter about pulling them. And it was sort of a breath of fresh air, because a lot of relationships with parents and children in WoW in particular tend to be at odds with each other. Even we'll talk about Varian and Anduin too, be at some point relatively soon, I would think, because they definitely ties into it. But there wasn't really that same tension between any of the children and Vareth. He was always the calmer of the heads of the parents. He was always the one that wanted the well-being of the family taken care of. He also felt the same duty and honor that, Sylvanas and her sisters felt, and in particular that Larissa felt. He just went about it a completely different way. And it was nice to see a healthy portrayal of that sort of relationship, counting, riding on his horse that was gifted to him by the King Anisterion with Sylvanas, having that fond memory of him at her back as they, sped through the forest or chased fireflies, having the recollection of the conversations that they had with knowing the noble families, understanding lineages, how to address people, but also tasking her with, you're smarter than this, you're better than this, you are not just a blade in the dark. And it was a nice thing. Now, I know you read most of the book, if not all of it, right?
Yep.
What did you think of their relationship?
Well, it was kind of filtered through the tragedy of the whole thing, because you knew wasn't going to make it.
Tragedy seems to be wrapped up with fathers. Go figure.
But, like you pointed out, it's actually interesting, because it kind of answered a question I've always had about Sylvanas, in that how was it that Sylvanas reached out to a human to be one of the Farstriders? That's something that I always thought was kind of weird. And it's not directly his, but it's kind of his influence.
Because he teaches
her diplomatic.
Yeah, to be diplomatic and open-minded, right?
Yeah, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
I do, however, want to talk about the best father in the Warcraft canon, though.
Which one?
Daelin Proudmoore.
Go for it.
That was a joke. Daelin Proudmoore was not a good father.
No, he wasn't.
No. But he is a father, and he did care about his family. In fact, one could argue that everything Daelin Proudmoore did wrong came from love of his family. For example, Daelin Proudmoore's incredibly racist and genocidal turn in Warcraft 3, I think it's Reign of Chaos, right?
I believe it is.
Yeah, it's in Reign of Chaos. It's when he shows up and he's going to, he takes over Theramore and throws Jaina in a cell and is going to murder every orc he sees. I mean, it's not, it's wrong. And the story clearly portrays it as wrong, but it is understandable because his son was murdered by the Horde. They flew enslaved red dragons over the fleet and just burned them to ash. He lost his eldest son, his heir, to the Horde.
Which was a parallel that was shared by Sylvanas, by the way.
And he also saw the Horde in action. He saw what they were doing. He saw the destruction of Stormwind. He knew what was coming for his people. So it isn't surprising to me that he never got over that. However, if you look at how he then interacted with his other children, Tancred Did he interact with Tancred? We never find out. We never know much of anything about Tancred's relationship with Daylin. And as for Jaina, obviously when Jaina was young, he doted on her. He refused her nothing. Instead of having her stay in Borealis and learn magic from the Borealan mages and specialize in, you know, the kind of magic that they were, you know, improving of, like, you know, controlling the wind, controlling weather, stuff like that.
Tide Sage stuff.
He allowed her to go and become one of the Kirin Tor, to go study in Dalaran. And she clearly was extremely gifted. I mean, Antonidas was like, so clearly he did care about her at the same time that he also saw a benefit to his people in it, in that he very much wanted, and I think both he and Taranis Menethil. Man, I could not remember his name for a second there. Both he and Taranis clearly wanted their children to get married.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And that's the kind of thing that, you know, royal families do. But it's also clear that he wouldn't have forced it.
No, had she said this is not what I want, this is not who I want to be with, you could tell that at the time, or at least before everything went sideways, he would have honored that, right?
Yeah. Well, Daylin, clearly, just the fact that he let her go to Dalaran, he let her make her own decisions for years. As her father and as the, you know, effectively the king of Kul Tiras. They didn't have a king, but the Lord High Admiral was essentially the ruler of Kul Tiras and still is. He could very much have said, you know, you're going to do what I want, but he respected her. He respected her ability. So in that way, he was a good father, and just unfortunate that his good father status broke him. When his son died at the hands of the Horde, he never got over it. He never got past it. He never accepted that it had happened. He accepted it had happened in the sake of that he knew it had happened and there was nothing could be done about it. But he internalized it to the point where he's straight up telling Thrall, you know, you think you can just reform? You know, and Thrall's like, you know, I'm trying to make the Horde better. I'm trying to like make some place. And he's like, no, your Horde killed countless innocents. You're murderers. Your kind is never going to change, and I will never stop fighting you. He said it right to his face. In that mania, he clearly mistreated his daughter, would not listen to her, would not take her.
Took control of Theramore.
Yeah. He imprisoned her. He put her, yep. You know, she started Theramore, and not with his ships, mind you. Those people were not Kul Tirans.
No,
there were a few, but.
They were survivors of Lordaeron.
Some survivors of Lordaeron, some of them were Gilneans, the Gilnean Brigade. They were people who were escaping. He didn't do anything to help those people, but the second he showed up, he decided he was in charge and put his daughter in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so, whilst the people of Kul Tiras saw what Jaina did as a betrayal, it's kind of hard not to think that she got betrayed first. Like, even if he didn't agree with her, it wasn't his decision to make what Theramore did. He could have taken his fleet, gone north, and just attacked Durotar if he wanted. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It was that action, that betrayal of his daughter's trust in him, that I think is the biggest mistake Daylin Proudmoore made. Because if he hadn't done that, I don't know that Jaina would have stepped in and helped the Horde.
No, and I think I think that's a very interesting point. We talk about how relationships can be used as a force in, like, even literary means, but in the game means of giving specific characters that push. And we saw this with Jaina in particular. There was a lot happening that really stems from her relationship with her father and what her relationship with her father became up to the end of his life at the hands of Rexxar. And despite the fact that it was Rexxar that put him down, despite the fact that it was a champion of the Horde, she still tried to have peace. She still tried to understand that the actions my father took do not have to define me. I can try to make the legacy something other than what it was at the end. She can remember the good times and move forward. And then you get to Battle for Azeroth, where, you know, it starts with the Warbringer short, which I think was in Legion, right? You get the Daughter of the Sea.
No, Daughter of the Sea, that short's definitely...
Harbingers
of the Legion ones, no.
That's right.
The Warbringer shorts were all Battle for Azeroth. They were intro to it.
That's right.
Except the Ashara one, which came out later.
But you see that like Daylan is still a prominent figure in whatever's going on in her life and her evolution as a person, because he's the ferryman in that Warbringer's short. She still has nightmares where she sees Daylan. She's still trying to make decisions based off of what she's doing that revolve around him and what that meant, what his choices were. And then you have Battle for Azeroth that sort of takes, you know, kind of goes off and does ramps it up to 11, where there's an entire encounter where you are trying to fight her, if you're Horde, trying to get her to stop laying siege to a Horde city, right? Like, but it's this ebb and flow with her that all stems from her relationship with her father, what her father did. Well, and it also had effect on Kul Tiras in general too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, since you mentioned that thing about the battle for, the Zaralor, did you get to play through Jaina's, quest line on the Alliance side?
I did.
Okay. So you know how she got taken to the Drust land of, I can't always forget what the Throats.
Yep.
And in Throats, she's being subjected to her own memories.
Mm-hmm.
As like a tax. One of them is her relationship with Arthas, but for the purposes of this, it's her relationship with her father that is a big part of it. Of her like just trying to understand why he wouldn't listen. And it was that that thing. That's why I called it a betrayal. It was that it wasn't that he threw her in prison. It wasn't that he took over Theramore. It was that he wouldn't listen to her. It would have been one thing if she'd sat down and he'd listened to her as she laid out what she was thinking, and then he'd come back with some reasons why they were going to, you know, the Horde had to be opposed. She wouldn't have agreed with it, but at least she would have gotten him to listen to her. I think it is that lack of listening that is the moment when, like, in every parent's life, you have to come to a point where you have to accept that your children are not children anymore, and then they're not your children anymore. Exactly. They will always be your children. You love them, but they're now at the point where they make their decisions, and you may not agree with those decisions. You don't get to override them,
and
because they're not children anymore. And there's that. Daylan couldn't let go of her, and I think it's a big part is because of that. Derek died so young. Derek died as a captain in the fleet. Derek died, and he blamed the Horde. But moreover, he couldn't allow himself to release her and believe what she was saying to him, because it was the final act of, you know, now she's the world. She's going to have to face the world. I can't protect her anymore. Do you see where I'm going with that? Like, does that make sense?
And it's interesting too, because there's we talked about this last week when Liz was on here and we were talking about Star Trek. As I'm going through The Next Generation, I just came across the episode where there's the Cardassians and the Starfleet are trying to come to the Federation of Planets are trying to come to sign a peace treaty. Essentially, they're trying to end years long conflicts, and there's one captain who is running through basically blowing up Cardassian ships and doing so because he's not coming to terms with how he's wounded with the loss of his, you know, wife and kids at the hands of a tragedy in the war. So even in a time of peace, he's can't fathom it. He's so wounded by it. And Daylan kind of is that same way, right? The loss of his son, the loss of everything except Jaina, basically, and his wife, are weighing on him so much because he
Tancred's in the background going, and me.
Yeah.
nobody cares about you, Tancred.
But it's one of those things where like he couldn't keep Daylan safe. Right. It was at the hands of the Horde. It was at what he was supposed to do as a father. He failed.
He let Derek go.
Yeah.
He let Derek be a man and take his role in Kul Tiras, and it killed him.
Mm hmm.
So now, the very fact that he was even there, he wasn't there to fight the Horde. He didn't go to Kalimdor to fight the Horde. He went to Kalimdor to find out what happened to his daughter, because she vanished, and no one knew where she was.
And he thought she was dead. He thought she was dead at the massacre at Lordaeron.
So when he found out no one knew what had happened, that people had seen her sailing away, he didn't hair off because, you know, the horde must be stopped. He haired off to find his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, even though I said in jest that he was the best father ever, he did care. He just couldn't express it. It's actually interesting because there's a contrast in his generation. Amongst the royal families of Stormwind, amongst the various humans, there's a contrast that someone who was actually a good father, Lane Rhyn was an exceptional father. His death wasn't because he not only did he teach his son as best he could how to be king, he taught him how to be a person. Mm-hmm. And how to actually think about the world. And he showed this through example. Like when he allowed Garona into Stormwind, he was trying to be open-minded and yeah, it bit him in the butt, but he was still attempting to do the right thing. And it's really funny because Varian Rhyn had essentially two father figures.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own father, Lane, who was a very good father figure. And then he had Anduin Lothar, who we now know is his uncle. Because Varian's mother, Varya, was Anduin's sister. That's it's established in lore now. It wasn't established in lore until they made the Warcraft movie, and then they were like, yeah, that's lore. That happened. So we now know that that's one of the reasons that Anduin Lothar fought so hard to keep Varian alive. And we also know that, therefore, Varian and his son Anduin were, in their turn, the last of the Arathi bloodline. Because they're, you know, the last living Arathi kings after, because of, you know, who Anduin Lothar was descended from. Thoradin himself, the first king of Arathi. It's interesting that the Trollbane line is not in any way directly descended from Thoradin. They're not that bloodline. But so we had Lane and Anduin Lothar, both as father figures for Varian. Varian, I would say, had a really hard time coming to terms with stuff that happened in his life in terms of fatherhood.
You should talk about that.
You should talk about it because I've been going for a bit.
Well, I mean, you have and so have I. But I mean, let's talk about the first war. So you have Varian who gets to live through the burning of Stormwind. Basically watching everything he grew up with fall down around him.
But that's not the worst part.
It's not. Go ahead.
Varian sees his father get his heart cut out of his chest by someone he trusted.
Yep. Yeah. Basically, I mean, he gets to witness that. He gets to witness the death of his father. He gets to witness the death of everybody. And then he has to run to Lordaeron, of all places. So you have Anduin Lothar, who was absolutely convinced that Stormwind could not be retaken. Grabbed Varian, grabbed Queen Tarya and anybody he could, and led that escape. And he brought them to Lordaeron. I'm paraphrasing. I'm shortening it because it's a long thing.
Yeah.
Where they would warn King Taranis Menethil II of what was coming, of the Horde and what everything that would happen. And so for a while, you know, he grew up, for lack of a better term, there while things were getting, I don't want to say settled because the world at large was still going through the first war. But then Varian became friends with Arthas, became friends with the Menethil line, was, you know,
that's where he got his third father figure.
Go ahead.
Because he had Anduin Lothar as his father figure after his father died. Then Anduin Lothar died fighting the Horde back. He died on top of Blackrock Mountain. So he lost that father figure and his last living relative, really, because his mother, I don't know what happened to his mother. I mean, if someone can tell me what happened to Varian Rhyn's mother, that would be great. But so then he's got Taranis, who took him in, who basically raised him. What? Because Lothar was off fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Lothar couldn't stay and raise
Varian
and tell him all the things he needed to do to be a king. Partially because, you know, what did he know about it? He'd been a fight general all of his life. He'd never been a king. And secondly, you know, he was busy fighting this war. So it was basically Taranis who stepped in and did all that or arranged for it to happen. It was Taranis who got Varian his tutors, who made sure he was trained, who made sure he knew not just how to fight, which he did. He was very good at fighting. He'd been trained by the greatest warrior in the entire Seven Kingdoms, but also how to be a king, how to rule.
And
so what happens to that father figure?
Well, there's more to it, too, that I want to add in there as well, because don't forget, it was because Terranus basically, for lack of a better term, suing the Alliance into action, that Stormwind was retaken. And that not only was Stormwind retaken, but the Alliance helped pay for the reconstruction of Stormwind and helped Varian take his position as king at the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things where, like, communication between them didn't stop. And Terranus was proud of who Varian was and how he was growing into a clever and noble king. And Varian got to feel a father's pride that might have potentially been a seed for Arthas to go off the rails later, but we'll talk about that. I mean,
that's actually a really big part of the Arthas novel.
Yeah.
When they go to Stormwind for Arthas to be knighted as a paladin, they do it at Stormwind Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it like Varian hosts them. I there's not much in the book that implies that Arthas was envious of Varian, but when he was younger, he clearly hero worshipped Varian.
Oh yeah.
And Varian, however, was like several years older than him and had just been through the burning of Stormwind, the death of his father, and the loss of, you know, Anduin Lothar had to go off to fight. He wasn't really in a place where he could respond positively to what Arthas was putting down. And that's something that, you know, that's important. But you can't really ignore that Terranus did the father role for him. That's absolutely the case. That in addition to his own children, he treated Varian like a son. And he made sure Varian was taught how to do the job. And then he made sure he got to do it.
Yes.
And Varian never forgot it. When it was Terranus's wish that the orcs would not be put to death, but would instead be kept in camps. And, you know, you can say what you want about that. It certainly wasn't a great thing. The camps weren't well run, but it was better than just killing them all. It was Varian who backed him first.
Mm-hmm.
And without Varian's support, you know, between Trollbane and bloody heck, why can I not remember the King of Glenaeus?
Gen.
Between, you know, Trollbane and Gen Greymane, there were like serious forces arrayed against Terranus on this one. He probably wouldn't have pulled it off if not for Varian and the Mages of Dalaran. And the Lord Admiral didn't care one way or the other.
And
that's something, that fatherly relationship that Terranus and Varian had definitely plays into what happens next to Varian. So you go now.
I was going to say, Varian also got to experience the joy of being a father, at least a little bit at first. Because Varian, after having studied under King Menethil and actually under like Tyrellian and other noble statesmen, and understanding what it is to be a king and what it is to sort of lead by example, you know, he married Tiffin. They had a child who he named after, you know, his uncle. But he would routinely go and leave Stormwind in the charge of the House of Nobles because he was doing his duty, fighting for the various kingdoms, going to various like fronts and making sure that things were taken care of, meeting with spy masters and making sure things were running smoothly.
Although he was also hunting someone.
And who was he hunting?
Garona Half-Orcan, the person who ripped his father's heart out.
Because revenge is definitely a motivator at that point, too, because the Horde, the orcs were still here, right? Even though, even at the after the end of the Second War, being in the camps and everything, there was no report of them going elsewhere, so of course he was going to be looking for his father's murderer.
But I do want to point out that, unlike a lot of people, Varian, he certainly didn't like orcs.
Mm-mm.
He certainly didn't think that anything good about them, but he didn't hunt all orcs. He didn't put his father's death on all orcs. He put it on the person he saw do it. And it's really hard to argue against that. He saw, you know, we know that the Shadow Council used dark magics on her, but he saw her kill him.
Now,
you know, and he was 10.
Now,
I mean, Batman, you know, comes out of that sort of thing. So it is actually surprising how restrained he was.
Now, we're going to probably speed through a bunch of Varian's formative years after this, simply because there's too much to cover. We could do an entire episode just on Varian. In fact, we might. He gets to witness the death of his wife at the hands of a riotous crowd, as the people that he entrusted to run a kingdom essentially caused said riot. The true cause of that yet to be seen until later on. Hi, Black Dragons. During the Third War, Varian journeys to Theramore to speak with Lady Proudmoore, and en route is abducted by the Defias, and is then, you know, imprisoned. I believe it was originally on Alcaz Island, I believe was the name of it, right? And then,
yeah, off the coast, yeah.
And then this is all at the behest of Anixia, who is looking for a way to get rid of him. And instead of getting rid of him, winds up splitting him in two, because that's a thing that happens.
Yeah, she wanted a docile, tractable Varian. She didn't want to just kill Varian, because then basically Bolvar would become king in effect, over, you know, holding out for until Anduin came of age. She didn't want that, so she tried to basically rip all the fighterly stuff that he got from Anduin Lothar out of him and just leave the diplomat trained by Taranis Menethil. Instead, she split him into two people. The warrior one escaped and ended up washing up in Durotar of all places.
And becoming a gladiator.
Yeah, he was pretty good at it too. The orcs all loved him. Logosh. Yeah.
But this isn't, we'll probably talk about Varian at length at some point, but all of this is he left behind his son, who Anduin was essentially in charge, even though Bolvar was behind acting as regent alongside of him. Anduin was king because Varian was absent, was missing, presumed dead. As far as
people knew, he might be dead. Yeah. So, and with a little helpful nudge from Anixia, Anduin was named king.
Now, the interesting thing is that his relationship with Anduin after he comes back, after he is made whole again, as the two halves of his personality are fused together, Varian still has that sort of Logosh mean streak about him, and Anduin is completely the opposite. Anduin is a child seeking peace. He's seeking the way of the light. We get to see several points in time, especially during things like Cataclysm, where Anduin is going to study in the priestly manner, not a paladin manner, and yet not to be confused, he is trained for war. Varian made sure that Anduin was ready to fight. That was a key component of it, because he would be absolutely damned if his child was defenseless. He lost his wife, he lost his kingdom, he lost his father. He wasn't going to lose his son. But there was a lot of tension between them, because Varian was very direct isn't the right word.
He didn't come back the person he had been.
No.
Whilst he did still have all of the knowledge that he'd gained growing up, he did still remember being the person he had been. He didn't, when he was combined back into from two Varians into one again, the joining wasn't complete. They weren't one person anymore. They were still kind of two people inside one body.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until Ghen Greymane tried to join the Alliance that Varian got to sort of rejoin the two halves of his self more fully. Even then, though, he still, what he'd been through had convinced him that war was the only solution to these problems. And it wasn't until his son showed him that, no, you know, we don't have to always result in bloodshed. And there's like, I can't remember where it's from. There's a thing where like, Varian says something like, I will rule with a sword all my life, but hopefully you won't have to. And it's that sort of, I mean, we're kind of glossing over this. I do feel it's important to say Varian straight up hit Anduin.
Yes, he did.
He straight up hit him. It was wrong and he knew it was wrong, but he lost his temper. And that's what led him to finally make peace with the Gilneans and seek their ritual to recombine himself more fully, because he realized he was out of control. But he did do it, and it needs to be mentioned. That is not a good dad moment.
No.
As somebody who knows what that one tastes like. Yeah, it is.
It's
a rough thing to see. But I do think that Anduin and Varian basically began to have a better relationship.
He started to listen to Anduin. He started to maybe not always agree with him, and they would often argue.
Yeah, but he started taking his arguments. He did what Daelin Proudmoore couldn't do. He recognized, he's growing up. He's finding who he is. I may not agree with him, but I do need to listen to him because this is a job he's going to have someday. He needs to be thinking about these things, and I need to show him what the cost of it really is. There's the moment in Orgrimmar, at the end of Siege of Orgrimmar, at the end of Mists of Pandaria. I think that that is a really good moment between Varian and Anduin, because Anduin is the one who's like, what are you going to do? And he says, what a king must do. And he thinks, you can tell the look on Anduin's face, Anduin thinks his father's going to march over there and start a war, but he doesn't. You know, he goes over there and says, look, you've done things to us, and, you know, they have not been answered properly, but we don't have the time for this. I'm not going to start a war now. I'm worried about my people. I'm going to take them out of here. I'm going to try to rebuild. Clean up your own house. He's firm with them. He's aggressive with them, but he doesn't push it. He doesn't make it a conflict. He does what he believes a king must do. And that's the thing. That is everything Anduin has done as a king has been an attempt to live up to that. He doesn't always succeed, but that's what he's going for. He's trying to figure out, okay, what do I have to do? What should I do?
There's a scene that I really liked in the, I believe it was the short story Blood of Our Fathers, where Varian actually winds up going to Tiffin's grave in the Stormwind Cemetery. And he starts questioning if Tiffin could still love the man that he had become, basically evaluating his life, evaluating if he was, you know, the best that he could be for his family, which at this point we had seen so many different like aggressive actions from him. This is after Moira had taken over Ironforge and trapped Anduin, in which Varian decided, okay, time to make the murder and go to.
Yeah, if Anduin hadn't been there, Moira would have been dead.
Yeah, her magic aside, she would not have stopped him. There is no way. But like it's him having to have those moments, I thought was always the most interesting, and in my opinion, one of the best written father arcs in Warcraft, because he starts to actually take steps to be a better father, to take time to teach his son statecraft, not just warfare, to introduce his son, which there's already scenes where we see Anduin understands people probably better than Varian does, but Varian understands it from a different angle, and you can see him trying to impart that to Anduin to try to make Anduin the person he knows he could be.
And at the same time, I mean, one of the reasons I mentioned it is because, unlike Daelin, he understands that Anduin has things he does not.
Mm-hmm.
Daelin could never accept that Jaina knew stuff he didn't. Varian eventually realizes, no, he's not just, you know, soft and reluctant. He understands things I don't. He's got wisdom I don't have. I don't know where he got it from. Did he get it from Tiffin? Did he learn it from his tutors? I don't know, but it's there. And while Varian, as you point out, Varian does not just follow around doing whatever Anduin says, he does consider him.
Yeah, there's another really good scene, and this goes back to the Sylvanas book, and I thought it was really, really interesting as well. There's a council being called with the news that the Legion is about to attack Azeroth again. And so all of the heads of state for both the Alliance and the Horde are being brought together. There's a meeting place, I believe it's in Dalaran, I want to say. It's been a while. But there's this scene where Varian shows up, and Anduin is with him. This is another important thing. He brought Anduin with him to all of the important meetings if Anduin chose to go. He didn't keep him away from it. He didn't separate him from that. He didn't keep him from interacting with the other heads of state. And there's heated arguments going on, and it's Anduin who casually, like, there's a standoff scene where nobody wants to sit down. Everybody is continuing to stand as they look at each other because it's that nobody wants to show weakness. Nobody wants to be the first one to sit down and show like deference or anything like that. And Anduin makes it very obvious as he walks over to a chair, pulls it out loudly, and sits down and scolds everyone and says, "We've got other things to worry about than your posturing. Let's get on with it." And then you see Varian have a proud father moment as he smirks and is like, "Okay, Anduin knows, yeah, like I'm doing okay. Like he's doing what he needs to do. This is, we did the right thing." And so they all sit down and progress through the meeting, but they wouldn't have been able to do that if Varian didn't bring Anduin with him. Something that, you know, Dalen Proudmoore probably wouldn't have done. Something that Ghen Greymane definitely wouldn't have done, right? You have all these fathers, all these noble leader-type folks that refuse to expose their children to what they actually do. And why I'm coming back to this is because this is something that, going back to, like, Varith, a Windrunner, he didn't. He made it a point to include his family in what he did as often as he did or could, including state dinners, receiving diplomats from other nations, being involved in meetings that he was allowed to have them there with him so that they could be exposed to that as well to understand the full breadth of what they were actually doing. Varian did the same thing with Anduin, and you actually don't see that a lot.
This makes me want to talk about a father who didn't actually ever get to be a father.
Go for it. We have time.
Durotar.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go for it.
Because you can't argue that Durotar didn't have an effect on his son, that Thrall didn't draw upon that figure.
You mean Durotan, by the way.
Durotan, yeah, sorry. Durotan, I mean, clearly Thrall named Durotar after Durotan. He was clearly thinking about him. But he didn't even know him until... He didn't even know who he was until Orgrim Doomhammer and, you know, Grom Hellscream told him about his father.
And Great Mother Gaea, too, like when he finally met her.
Yeah, Great Mother Gaea as well. So this is very much, and I think we actually kind of have to talk about Grom and Garrosh in the same discussion. Because again, there you have a father who isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the son who reacts to it. But unlike Thrall, who's always given a positive portrayal of his father by the people who knew him, Grom was not, you know, Garrosh did not hear good things about Grom.
No.
All he heard about Grom was that Grom was the guy who drank the blood first. Grom was the guy who got us into this. Grom was the guy who led us down the path of slavery and damnation. So you have these two young orcs growing up in very different circumstances. One of them convinced that his father and everything he inherited from his father was evil incarnate and horrible. And the other, whose father, when he finally discovers him, is held up to him as this great chieftain, this hero who tried to stop all the bad things from happening and was murdered for it. And there's that in that case, in both cases, that is an interesting dichotomy, in my opinion, that really shapes who both Thrall and Garrosh became. The fact that Thrall's name is Thrall,
mm-hmm.
and that they call him Thrall, like other people do, even the orcs do, when, you know, that is because his parents were murdered, his mother and his father were murdered. We see what happened to his mother after she died. We know what became of her. We have no idea what happened to Durotan.
Yeah, we still don't.
We've never seen him again. He's never come up again. We don't know if he went to the Shadowlands. Obviously he did because he died, but where is he? We don't know. He might have,
but
he was an orc consumed by duty. You know, it was his duty to his family, to his wife, to his unborn child, to his people that drove him onward. Like, he didn't leave the Horde or set himself against it because he knew it was his duty to his people to get them someplace where they wouldn't all die. Once they made it to Azeroth, though, they were out of there. They found the first place they could go to get away from Gul'dan and his horde. They abandoned it,
mm-hmm.
and they were murdered for it. And they were murdered, you know, for trying to speak out against them, for talking to Orgrim and saying, "Dude, you've got to turn on this guy. It's crazy." And, you know, if Orgrim Doomhammer had been the man that Durotan was, and he admitted this, he would have just killed Gul'dan as soon as he could instead of following Blackhand. But he felt like he had to follow Blackhand, that he had to remain loyal. And as a result, his friend got murdered. And his friend's child, as far as he knew, his friend's child got murdered. And it wasn't until years later. And that's, Orgrim ends up being a father figure to Thrall. Like, Orgrim Doomhammer, I think it's fair to say both he and Grom play similar roles. Although Grom, I'd say, is never a father figure. He's more of an older brother.
Yeah, I think even in the speech that Thrall gives, he does refer to him as a big brother. Actually, I'm going to look that up here real quick.
You're looking it up. I thought I would talk, but if you're going to talk, go for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the interesting thing between Thrall and Garrosh is they are two characters who live underneath the crushing legacy of their fathers, and each of them is a different legacy, and it's fascinating to see how that... It's almost like a classic trope of writing where it's like, it's the one thing that went wrong that caused this cascade, this butterfly effect of terribleness, because had Grommash, done what he needed to do ahead of time and not be the one that started the curse, would Garrosh have been as he was? The quote by Thrall, by the way, is, "In many ways, the curse of our people began and ended with Grom. His name meant giant's heart in our ancient tongue. He earned that name 100-fold as he stood alone before the demon Manaroth and won our freedom with his blood. Loktar Ogar, big brother, may the war song never fade." Like, that's an enormous thing as well, because put yourself in Garrosh's shoes, and Thrall is telling you about your father. He's telling you about the legacy that he left behind, that he was the initial cause for the agreement of drinking the demon's blood. But then at the end, he stood and fought and paid the ultimate price to free all of the orcs from the curse that he himself had put on them. That will mess you up. How do you live up to those expectations? How do you live up to grow in that shadow? And you can see the effects that it has on Garrosh.
Yeah, because he goes from somebody who doesn't want to lead, who doesn't want to possibly perpetrate the same kind of moral failure on his people that his father did.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to lead them to be destruction the way his father did. And then, Thrall shows up and is like, no, man. Yeah, he did that. That happened. But then he had a really cool act too, man, that you got to hear about.
Yep.
And Garrosh goes from that reluctant, hesitant person, that self-hating person who thinks he is damned by the sin of his descent, to someone who's like, I'm going to be the orkiest orc who ever orked an orc.
No.
I'm going to go out there and I'm going to lead and I'm going to be like 10 times the orc anybody else is. And he went, it's like, it was honestly like, you know how Blizzard used to do and possibly still kind of does the pendulum swings where like, oh, that mechanic didn't work. We're going to like get rid of it entirely. It's like, no, man, you could just, oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like, that's what Garrosh did. And the reason that it happened was because Thrall had no idea how to explain to him what, you know, the complicated person Grom actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because what did he know about talking to someone about their father? Nothing, except what they told him about his father.
Yeah,
and Orgrim wasn't telling him all the ways that Durotan effed
failed.
Up.
Failed, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he was telling him the heroic stuff.
Well, think
and
about
that's
it.
What he did.
Think about it. Like, even the great mother, quote, he was an immovable mountain, a pillar of strength and honor. He sacrificed himself so that we could survive, so that generations of orcs after him could be born into a world without the blood curse, without Gul'dan and his old horde. Oh, Durotan, how I wish you could be here. Your people so desperately need you. Like, you get that quote. Which is, yeah, your father was a rock star. He did everything right. When he found he couldn't do the ultimate thing, he noped out to give everybody a chance. Like, he did everything that he was supposed to do versus what Thrall is telling Garrosh about his father. Like, there's a wild difference there, which is also why a big arc in later expansions for Thrall is realizing how bad he effed up. Right. How bad he effed up specifically with Garrosh, And even in that final confrontation with them, in that final, battle between them in the Magora, Garrosh basically says, "You made me. I am what you did. I am your mistake." And Thrall doesn't realize that until later. And to be fair, Garrosh does actually get to go out in a glorious act too. Just took till Shadowlands to get it. He paid the ultimate sacrifice by embracing unexistence to fight back against his captor and the jailer's force.
he does it in a very Garrosh way.
100%.
Where he's not sorry for anything he ever did. And he doesn't apologize or try to make amends. He's doing it out of pure defiance.
Yep.
And it is really, I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it's Thrall's fault. But at some point, you know, we got to say, Garrosh never learned that other lesson of his father. That you can be wrong and atone for it. He didn't learn it. He learned about the big sacrifice, but he didn't learn what it meant. And so it's, in a way, it's even more tragic that Garrosh never really got to either be or meet his father.
Yep.
He never got to. And when he tried, he went back in time into another universe. But that wasn't really his dad. That wasn't his father. It was as much like him as any, you know, two blades of grass thing, that blah, blah. But it still wasn't him. And there's always going to be that weird scene where he pulls Gorhowl out of Manoroth and tosses it to Grom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can tell he's thinking, this isn't my Gorhowl. I lost that. I left that behind. It's just, it's a lot. Like the arc of those two characters bouncing off of each other is in many ways about the idea of absentee fathering. And not that it's either fault necessarily. I mean, Grom couldn't get home. You know, it's not like Sorfang, who was possibly even more difficult to live up to as a father. But I don't think we have time. Do we have time to talk about Sorfang as a dad?
I mean, I'm perfectly fine to take, I think our listeners at home will be more than happy for us to spend another 5-10 minutes on that. So please feel free.
Well, I mean, look at the Sorfang and his, not just Sorfang himself, his brother does an astonishing thing. So Sorfang has that kind of pressure, but then Sorfang, you know, he's this figure who just lives through all the wars. And in the process, creates this legend that his son is eager to live up to. He's not hesitant, and he doesn't doubt himself. He is dying to get out there and prove he is the son of Sarfang. You know, he's Varrok's son, Dranosh Sarfang. You know, it means like, you know, heart of Draenor. He's going to get out there, and he's going to show everybody what he's made of. And you can't even argue that he fails at that. He is almost the stereotypical ultimate orc in that when presented with a figure of death and destruction, his first response is charge it with an axe, because he only learned half of what his father was. Again, it's actually very similar to Garrosh. He only knew his father through the legend. He didn't actually get to know him because his father was off fighting the various wars. So he had a picture of his father he was living up to, but he didn't actually know the regret. He didn't know the very, as much as Varrok Sorfang hated to admit it, he was extremely canny.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason he was alive through all of it. The reason that he only died, you know, like almost ancient by orc standards, is because he was smarter than he wanted to be.
Cunning but brutal is the way that I would put it.
But not just cunning. He was flat out smarter than he wanted to be because he understood it.
There's a reason he was the supreme commander of the might of Kalimdor.
Yeah. And there's that bit where he confronts Garrosh and he actually gets through to Garrosh.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they're having that conversation, when, you know, his own son is fighting in that war, but he hasn't dead yet. He's talking to Garrosh and he talks to him, the only person who's ever spoken to Garrosh like a child, because nobody else was in the position to do it. There was no father for him. His father was off in another world. So here's Varrok, who knew Garrosh, who understood him, and who flat out tells him, "I remember your father. And if it looks like you're going to do what he did, I'll kill you myself."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Garrosh needed to hear. Can you imagine if Drenosh hadn't died?
Oh,
if
wow. Varrok, yeah.
If Varrok hadn't had to turn his attention to, like, you know, the loss of his son, to the mockery that the Horde made of his son. Not the Horde, sorry. The Scourge.
The Scourge.
Yeah. If he hadn't had to turn his attention, he was the only one who seemed able to get through to Garrosh. Like, the only one who said these things, and instead of Garrosh rejecting them out of hand, he actually goes, how have you lived so long? You know, he asks. It's not an attack. It's not an insult. He straight up wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tragedy of the highest order that Sorfang didn't get to spend that time with Garrosh and help him in a way Thrall couldn't. Thrall was like a little younger than Garrosh. What's he going to tell him?
Yep.
You know, I mean,
and think about it. Think about what a different world or a different character Garrosh would have been if, you know, if like Varian being able to go to Turnus Menethil and have him as a surrogate father, if Garrosh would have been able to do that with Sarfang from the very beginning. Sarfang, brother of Broxagar, you know, one who led the forces of combined of Kalimdor against the Silithid, a war hero, an icon, somebody who is living legend.
And he's not going to sugarcoat it.
No,
he's not going to tell you only the good things your dad did. He'll straight up tell you he was a fucking maniac.
That's our
sorry.
One.
Yeah, that's our one. He'll tell you that. He'll tell you he was a maniac. He had his good side, but he also had his really bad side. If I see his bad side coming out of you, I will deal with you.
Yep.
You know, and be believed. You know, anyone else said it, Garrosh's hackles would have gone up, and he would have been like, "Let's do the tango." But
not Sarfang.
Sarfang said it, and he believed it.
Yeah.
Had his son not died, had he not basically shut down for a while? Because, you know, it's one thing to lose, you know, someone you care about. It's one thing to, like, see people die. It's another thing to be old and waiting for death and your son dies.
Like, I'm not
that's the future. That's your future. Just yeah. Going. If you've ever seen Avatar, the Uncle Iroh, you know the one I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's that.
And
except then he gets turned into an undead monster and you have to go help kill him again.
And think
so
about
it's even worse.
And think of it this way, too. Had he not retreated like that into himself, there's a very good chance that he, instead of Garrosh, would have been named War Chief.
Oh yeah.
You know, but it was one of those things where, like, Thrall knew damn well Sarfang wouldn't take the role, even if he Sarfang would have just said no and walked away. There would have been no, oh, my duty calls for this, my honor demands it. Sarfang's gonna be like, nah, my kid's dead. I'm gonna be over here mourning for a while longer. Bye. I gave you my son. I gave everything
that's
to the
enough.
Lord. Yeah.
That's enough. So yeah. But for that matter, had his son not died, he might have been named War Chief.
Also true.
You know, because whilst he was still pretty reckless, he wasn't Garrosh reckless, you know. That's, you know, there's reckless and then there's Garrosh reckless.
Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, that is one of the most heartbreaking scenes that, for me, that was ever written into World of Warcraft, was the scene where, you know, especially even if you're Alliance, right, and you defeat.
Actually, I've done it both Alliance and Horde, and I'll say this. Horde, it's heartbreaking, but Alliance, it's even worse.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
Sorfang has to come to Varian and say, please.
Yeah.
And Varian doesn't drag it out. Doesn't make it, like, you know, I think it's Magni. Magni is all, oh, we should be. And he's like, Magni, he's not a Horde coming to fight us.
He's a father collecting his son. Yeah.
He's a father come for his son.
Yep.
I know what he is feeling. Because if it was my son, I know how I would feel.
And I was just going to say, to bring it full circle, we wouldn't have gotten here in that moment, because Varian wouldn't have let him do that had Anduin not been slowly, like, changing his father's perceptions of the world.
Yeah. And also, though, just the very fact of Anduin, the fact that he was a father, yep. Somebody else like who wasn't a father up there might have said, no, F off. But someone who knew the kind of pain Sarfang was in, it didn't matter that he was an orc. It mattered that he was dying inside. Yep. And the only thing keeping him going was that body over there. So yeah, you want, yeah. As a man, take your son. And it is pretty much, if we're going to talk about fathers in World of Warcraft, it's probably the best note to go out on.
I would agree.
That meeting between fathers at top Icecrown Citadel. We didn't even get to talk about Arthas's daddy issues.
No, we can spend, again, we can spend a whole time talking about that too. It, again, I wanted to talk about it just because so much of Warcraft's story, so much of a lot of Blizzard's writing has really revolved around the relationship between a father or even some, a lot of cases, their mother. And we'll talk about those in another time, and their children. A lot of it is, you know, the themes of paying for the sins of your parents, or your parents doing the best they can or thinking that they are and still going, you know, sideways. There's a lot of
yeah, interest. If we do a mother one, Catriona, yep. And we're going to, there's some, we didn't do Deathwing.
So,
and Deathwing needs to be, but definitely Jaina and her relationship with her mother.
Yep.
Because that one is really important. But there's others too. Yeah.
So we may end up doing a belated Mother's Day episode, since it was, you know, a month ago. But for now, I think that's going to do it for us. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. All of us at Blizzard do continue to stand with the employees of Activision. All of us at Blizzard Watch continue to stand with the employees of Activision Blizzard in demanding change for a better tomorrow, as well as their continued efforts to unionize and their successful efforts therein. Congratulations again, Raven QA. We also hope that the rest of the game industry will follow suit. But with that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.